49% of the respondents said they're not regularly asked for other ideas. 50% said nothing will ever happen. This one's interesting. 56% said they don't share ideas because they are afraid that they won't get credit. And then 67% said, my manager operates around the notion of this is the way we've always done it, so why bother?
Right.
And so those are big numbers. And you know, you could choose more than one answer, which is why those numbers are so big. But people had a lot of reasons that they were holding back those ideas.
Helping you create loyal customers and loyal employees all through the power of simplicity. This is the Simple Brand Podcast, now heard around the world, including Palma, Spain. I'm your host, Matt Lyles, and this week I'm talking with Karen Hurt. Karen and her husband David are the founders of Let's Grow Leaders. It's a training firm focused on helping human-centered leaders find clarity in uncertainty, drive innovation, and achieve breakthrough results, all without losing their humanity. Karen's an international keynote speaker. In fact, Inc. magazine says she's one of the top 100 leadership speakers. And Karen's the best-selling author of 4 books, including her latest, Courageous Cultures: How to Build Teams of Micro-Innovators, Problem Solvers, and Customer Advocates. Now, I don't know if you've seen this in your organization, but a lot of leaders today are concerned that their employees aren't proactively solving problems when they notice them. Now, lots of leaders believe that they have an open environment where their employees can speak up, share concerns, and feel heard and feel understood. But then they're shocked when they learn that their employees are actually holding back. And this pattern is all too common across every industry and every company size. On one hand, management is thinking that their employees aren't sharing enough new ideas and aren't speaking up enough. On the other hand, employees are thinking that their ideas aren't being heard, and because of that, figure there's no point in sharing new ideas. So who's to blame in this situation? The leaders or the employees? Well, maybe the real answer isn't who's to blame, but what. Maybe the real blame lies with the culture. But good news, you can turn all of that around by creating a culture that thrives on sharing ideas, proactively solving problems, and generating contributions from all levels and all employees. And thankfully, Karen has a simple roadmap to help you build and maintain that courageous culture. So here it is. Here's my interview with Karen Hurt.
Hi, Karen. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Yes. Well, I am excited that you're here. I am loving the concept of courageous cultures.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I'm curious, though, why a focus on courage? What are people afraid of?
What are people afraid of? Well, in the context of the book, the problem we're solving is why are people afraid of speaking up and sharing their ideas and really fostering collaboration? And, you know, we got so curious about this concept because we were working across a variety of industries all over the world, and we were hearing from executives that were saying, why don't more people speak up? Why don't people share their ideas? Why am I the one that has to stumble on these best practices? But then we would go in to do training or work at the front line of the very same organizations, and we heard, nobody wants my ideas. Last time I spoke up, I got in trouble. Nothing ever happens anyway. So we set out to do an extensive research study that was both quantitative and qualitative to ask a couple of questions. When people were holding back ideas, what kinds of ideas they were holding back, and they weren't trivial. Was it, oh, I wish we had kombucha in the break room, virtual Taco Tuesdays.
Yeah.
They said they were holding back ideas to improve the customer experience, to improve the employee experience, two things that I know you are very, very focused on,
yes,
and to improve productivity. And so those are important ideas that people are deliberately withholding. And then we asked why they were holding back those ideas. And if you'd like, we can go into a little bit about those reasons.
I would love to know what's holding them back from sharing those ideas.
So it's interesting. 49% of the respondents said they're not regularly asked for other ideas. 50% said nothing will ever happen. This one's interesting. 56% said they don't share ideas because they are afraid that they won't get credit. And then 67% said, my manager operates around the notion of this is the way we've always done it, so why bother? Right. And so those are big numbers. And you can choose more than one answer, which is why those numbers are so big. But people had a lot of reasons that they were holding back those ideas.
I hear from a lot of leaders that will say, why aren't my people bringing ideas to me? I have an open door policy. They know that they can come to me with their ideas. So this seems like a big disconnect here.
Matt, that is the number one thing we hear too. Well, I have an open door, right? And that really came through in the qualitative case studies that we did too, because we would show people their quantitative data that said people were holding back ideas. And then they would be frustrated because they say, I have an open door. The problem with an open door is that it really still takes some level of courage for most people to walk through it. That's one piece. The other is they may not even know that they have an idea that you need. Maybe they're disconnected from the strategy. That's why you really need to be proactively creating real clarity about where you need ideas and then proactively going out and inviting people into those conversations.
Yes, that's something that I've seen with clients of mine where they've said, Matt, like, here's where we need help in our cultures. Our people don't even know what's going on. And so a lot of it has to do with just sharing. Here are the big projects. Here's what's going on in the company. Here's our priorities. Here's our focus. And I think that helps people to generate ideas. Oh, that's what we're focused on. I think I know an idea for that.
100%. So it was so interesting when we first started experimenting with the different tools, because we wanted to take all this research and then make it like super practical. If I am managing a team, how do I get their ideas, remarkable, usable, practical ideas, not just ideas?
Right.
So we tried the tools in a couple of ways. First, we would say with some teams, okay, bring us any ideas that would make things better, improve the customer experience, employee experience, or productivity, anything like that. And we would use the tools and we'd have a great day. People would come up with great ideas. But then like 90 days later, nothing was happening with those ideas. But then we would do the exact same tools, processes, techniques, but we started with, here are three areas that we absolutely need a great idea. By creating that clarity, people are like, oh. So an example was one organization we were working with. One of the ideas they came up with is, I think we should just build a tiny house. That will solve some of our problems of, that's a neat idea, but it takes a lot to build a tiny house, right?
Right.
But if you say, what's one way we can make the productivity in this circumstance or in this market much better? Here's the parameters. We can only spend this amount of money. We've got to include these people. So you have now really created clarity about what success looks like. People will respond to that. And then the other benefit of that is if you use people's ideas, people will be more confident to contribute more ideas.
Yes.
And the more ideas you use, right, the more confident. And so now you have this virtual cycle of confidence and innovation. And so that's why you want to be really clear. And it's interesting. So many times people come to me and say, my managers are just not critical thinkers. And it sounds like you've heard some of this too. And well, they don't have enough information to think critically. And so helping to bring people in to understand more of what's happening in your business is really a good place to start.
When you talk about setting those parameters, to me, that also provides constraints.
Yes.
And I think when we have constraints, that's when we're able to better create ideas. If it's just a complete blank page, sometimes it's a bit difficult to come up with ideas, or you start to come up with the wrong ideas. Are you familiar with the story of how Dr. Seuss wrote Green Eggs and Ham?
No, but I would love to hear it.
Forgive me. It was either Green Eggs and Ham that came first or Cat in the Hat that came first. What happened was he had a bet with his publisher that says, I challenge you to write a children's book using only 50 words. That's your constraints. You can't use any, you can't use more than 50 words. And so he did it. He wrote it. And it turned out to be one of his most popular books ever. To me, like, that's how providing parameters and providing constraints can help get you like a really innovative and creative idea.
Yes, yes. And it also makes people feel less intimidated. So, for example, if I said, hey, Matt, what ideas do you have for me to improve my leadership? Say you're working on my team and I say that. Well, gosh, where do I start? And how much feedback do you really want? And usually when people approach things that way, they'll get, oh, no, you're doing good, right? But if I say, hey, Matt, I am really this year absolutely focused on improving our communication on our team. And as your leader, I want to make sure that I am role modeling Lily. What is one way, I could improve our team communication? Now, that seems easy. That doesn't seem stressful. And you can say, oh, well, Karen, I think you should do this or that. And then I say, thank you. Anything else I could do to improve my leadership? Because now we're warmed up. Right. We call that a courageous question. When you just ask for something that's very specific and humble, that assumes that improvement is possible, can really make a big difference. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. And it helps prime that person's brain or their viewpoint. Oh, this is what I want to focus on in trying to help solve this problem. Those are some techniques to help get people to speak up. But you talk about steps, like an actual process, actual steps for building a courageous culture. Can you walk through those steps?
Yes. I'll hang on the first four because four is plenty for people to remember, and I'm happy to go through the others. But the first four are something that every single leader can do, whether you are a frontline supervisor in a contact center or whether you're leading a sales team. It starts with navigating the narrative. And that is really getting clear on how comfortable you are speaking up. Because if you go to your team, which I see happen all the time, oh, yeah, bring me any ideas. So open. Yes, let's take some risks. Let's innovate. So you're telling your team this, but they're watching you and you're not speaking up to your peers and you're not advocating for the team. You're not bringing ideas forward to your manager. They're watching what you're doing and they're like, yeah, no, it's not safe around here. So that's the first thing. And then part of navigating the narrative too is really being sure that you've eliminated what we call toxic courage crushers. And these are things like shame, blame, intimidation. Because if you are freaking out when somebody makes a mistake, they're not going to have any energy to bring you ideas or to innovate. That's the first step. And I'm going to assume anybody who's spending the time listening to your podcast isn't doing the courage crushers things. I mean, they've gotten past that. Otherwise, they wouldn't be investing in their own leadership like that. So
that's a good assumption.
Yeah. So let's assume you're leading in a human-centered way. You are modeling the way. That's the first step. And that means even if you're not working at a particularly courageous organization, you know, you can do this even if you don't really see it being modeled from others. Just start with your sphere of influence. Then it's creating clarity. And this is what we've been talking about. Clarity around two things. One, clarity that you really do want people's ideas. And clarity around what a good idea would accomplish. Strategically, where do you need a great idea? So then it's cultivating curiosity. And this is where you are proactively using tools and techniques to invite people into the conversation, to share their ideas. So one way to do this is what we call our idea model. If you are right now, you're sitting here thinking, oh, I have an idea I'd like to pitch. This is a good way to pitch it. Or if you say, hey, I wish my team would bring me more ideas, go tell them where you want an idea and then show them this idea model and have them frame their ideas in this way. Why is this idea interesting? Meaning, why is it going to solve this strategic problem that we have? Yesterday, my son, Sebastian, who is a senior in high school, walked in my room. First, he made sure we weren't on air. Yeah. I'm not doing any podcasts or virtual training. He knows the drill. Nice. Peeks in, and then he goes, "Mama, I have an idea that's going to enable me to go to college for free."
Hooray.
Now, that's a good opening line. Right. Now, he has got his mama's attention, because I would love nothing more than for that kid to go to college for free. Now, I don't actually think that this idea is going to work, but we're going to try. But is your first line when you share an idea, "I have an idea that could save us $10,000. I have an idea that it could improve the productivity of this process. I have an idea that could take your blog subscribers up 50,000%. Right. Like, now you're listening to that idea.
You have my attention.
Then D, doable. Is this something that we could actually pull off? E, engaging. This is where you teach your people to think about stakeholders. They don't have to have done all the stakeholdering, but
right,
helping them to think critically, who else would we need to involve in this? Is this a compliance thing? Do we got to go check, you know, with legal? Is it an HR thing? Do we have to check? Is it a union? If we're in a union environment, is it a finance thing? So to say, okay, I have an idea, think it would improve this productivity. Here's why I think we could pull it off. And I know we would need to check with HR to make sure it's okay. And then A, actions. What are a couple of your first recommended key first steps? So imagine you have an idea and you go to your manager and say, "Hey, I have an idea. This is why it's interesting, doable, engaging, actions." Even if your manager does not use that idea, you have showed up. Someone who cares critically, thinks and cares about what's going on in the organization, that you are a critical thinker, that you've thought things through, that you are articulate and can communicate things well. You've already won, even if they don't use your idea.
It shows a level of intention around the idea, not just like, all of a sudden, the light bulb goes off in your head and you just immediately jump up out of your cube and go run to your manager. "Hey, I just got an idea that hit me." No,
you know,
like, actually people, take the time to process it.
Yeah. And it's funny what has happened. And we didn't tell them to do this, but our people on our team will, on the header of the email, they'll write, "I have an IDEA." And then they'll, in the email, it'll say, and they'll break it down, interesting, doable, engaging actions. Time is short. They can get our attention with that pretty fast, right? Because, well, that is interesting. Yeah.
I'm curious, are there different ways to approach that framework based on if it's a small but still good idea, or if it's like a sizable idea, like a board of directors needs approval type idea?
So small ideas, I mean, this is a way to just vet your idea. It works really well if you've got one of those idea grenadiers, you know, the people who are just lobbing idea after idea after idea at you without having really thought them through,
yeah,
right? Expecting you to do something about it as opposed to taking actions on their own. But this is that if you have a big idea you're going to pitch to the board of directors, obviously you need to think this through more thoroughly. So we actually have a process that we call our idea incubator process. This is something that we go in and do with organizations. For example, a couple of months ago, we were in Switzerland with Nestle. We took four of their key strategic initiatives, things where they really needed important ideas. Some of them were proprietary business ways of thinking. Some of them were more cultural things, but the senior team from the like CEO of the Swiss market and his direct reports had all agreed that these four strategic areas were something where they needed usable, remarkable ideas. And then we went through the idea incubator process with about 150 people and put them in teams and had each of the teams then working using our Own the Ugly technique, which I can teach you real quick, and then saying, how can we? And then ultimately coming up with an IDEA that then they positioned to the senior team, and the senior team said yes or no. Well, we were able to come up in that process very quickly in a couple of hours, four, one for each of the initiatives, really good, usable ideas. Now, of course, we didn't figure it all out, right? I mean,
right.
So there's still now, all right, well, we're going to have to go do a market analysis of this, and we're going to have to do a feasibility study of that. So before you then take that to your board of directors, there's more work to do, but at least you're getting directionally where you're headed next.
So to me, that speaks to that action piece of the idea. Yeah. Here are the next steps, the next right things. And here are the open questions that we need to get answers to.
So we do a program, Texas Christian University, and it's with their faculty and staff. It's a 10-month program that they do. We come in and do the final day. And the final day is about ideas, right? And in that moment, in one day, some of these ideas they come up with are pretty big. There's no way they would have the time in that day to go research all the data. So what they'll do is they'll say, okay, so this is the research that we would have to do. We'd have to go talk to this department. We'd have to gather this data. We'd have to do this feasibility. And that's perfectly acceptable because nobody expects in a couple of hours that they would have been able to actually do all that data collection. But to your point, it's here's where we would go from here. So you could hand this to somebody and then they could go work on it.
Excellent. Yeah, that makes sense. I hear from a lot of leaders that they have a desire for all their employees, all their team members to be more innovative. At the same time, when the majority of people hear the term innovative or innovation, we tend to think of like those big technological innovations or big, like the best disrupting innovative companies like Tesla. And so a lot of people might have that mindset of, well, I'm just simply not innovative. I can't even do that. But it sounds like your concept of micro innovations helps with that.
The subtitle of the book is Building Teams, Micro Innovators, Problem Solvers, and Customer Advocates. And you can teach anyone to be one of those, right? And that's what you want. You want people coming to work and saying, how could we do this better? Is there a better way? Is there a different way to do this? And not be bots. You do a lot with CX. I am not a fan of scripts where you just have, because you can always tell when you're dealing with a script reader.
Right.
And that's when you lose the empathy. That's when you lose the common sense, right? The coop to be able to say, okay, you may be working with this product for a while. What's one idea that you have that would make it better, create a better experience for our customers who are using this product? Or I know we have rolled out this new system, and I know you're trying to be a good sport to use it, but tell me one thing that's frustrating you about this new system. Or we're asking this one a lot during the pandemic. People are stressed and tired working from home. You know, they're feeling isolated. What is one thing that you think could help your mental health, the company could support you with? And so these are just small, little micro innovations. And it's maybe, oh, if we could just change the schedule a little bit, or we could just maybe gather and do something informally for a minute. Or, you know, there's this one step of the process that I think is redundant. I'm having to swivel chair. I'm putting the data into this system, and then I have to swivel over here and put the data into that system. And actually, if we could get those two systems to talk to each other, it would say, right, it's the people closest to the work that know what those answers are. And yet a lot of times they are not being deliberately asked for ways to fix those things.
That goes back to the research you were talking about earlier. A lot of times it just comes down to asking them and being able to ask the right questions too.
Yep. So I believe I gave you three and I promised four of the steps.
Right. Right.
So the fourth one is so important. And this one is what we call respond with regard. So 50% of the people said nothing would ever happen with their idea. Some of the time, something is happening with their idea and they don't, but the loop isn't closed. So they don't even know. That's one thing. And of course, you're going to get ideas that you can't use. You're going to get a lot of ideas you can't use. So how do you respond in a way that continues to motivate people to still have the confidence to share their ideas? There's a three-step process that we like to think about with this. So say somebody brings you an idea and you can't use it. It's a hard no. You're going in this direction strategically and their idea would accomplish something completely opposite. You want to respond with gratitude. Thank you. And now here's the thing. You're not necessarily thanking them for that specific idea. It might be really wacky, But you want to say, thank you so much for caring about our organization and our team to be bringing us these ideas. Really appreciate you thinking about this. Then information. We're not going to be able to use that idea because it will cost us $10,000 and our budget is $40,000. Or we're not going to be able to use that idea because that would actually be great if we were doing a B2B kind of rollout for this plan. But this is really a B2C strategy. So you're providing information to help them think more critically. And then you want to respond with an invitation to contribute more. What ideas do you have that would be, you could be done with that $40? Or what ideas do you have that would really help us since we're marketing this new product to B2C? Right? Now, I may be disappointed that you didn't use my idea, but I understand why. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The piece around the invitation and information, that helps provide even more of that clarity that kind of helps get them focused on aligning the right idea to the right problem.
Exactly.
And then with gratitude as well, a lot of times I hear of programs that people will put in place and they'll reward employees for the ideas that actually get used. And so you're talking about only a small number, a small percentage may actually get used, and you're only rewarding those. So to me, that's rewarding the outcome, but not necessarily the behavior that you're trying to drive.
I am still salty, Matt, about an idea that I contributed to a bank that I worked at when I was 22 years old, which I still think is a great idea. And do you know what I mean? But it was the same thing. I didn't even get a thank you for your idea. Right? They were like, well, nope, that did not win our innovation contest.
Yeah.
And I was young, first job kind of thing. But I still, when I think about, they should have made a bigger deal because I spent a lot of time putting together, you know, the business case for it. And so I think the thank you for contributing, we really appreciate that versus nope, didn't make the cut, didn't make first round. It just, then you feel like you've lost when you shouldn't feel like you've lost. You should feel like you're winning for contributing.
Right. And in my mind, in that situation, it would be possible that maybe you might have another winning idea in the future, but because you did not receive gratitude, because your behavior wasn't rewarded, you're just like, I'm not even going to share that idea, or I'm not even going to extend my brain energy to even try to come up with a new idea.
Yeah. And as it turns out, and I didn't even stay at that organization very long. I mean, I'm salty.
Yeah. I don't blame you. So what are some other mistakes that we should watch out for when we're trying to get our employees to share more ideas? What are the things that we need to not be doing?
One of the things I think that human-centered leaders, like your listeners, sometimes the trap we fall into, and I know I've fallen into this trap, is assuming because you are a human-centered leader and asking people for their ideas, that people feel safe. Dr. Amy Edmondson is really considered to be the pioneer of psychological safety. She wrote the foreword to Courageous Cultures. She has a lot of research that says that people are more likely to hold on to a negative experience with speaking up than a positive one.
Right.
And discount the future benefits of speaking up and overweight the fear that they feel, which our data proves out too. So what that means for you as a human-centered leader is that even if you really do genuinely want people's ideas, it is statistically likely that they had a bad experience with some jerk in the past who stole credit for their idea or shamed them in front of their group or did one of these terrible things that is all over our research. And they're like, yep, nope, never doing that again. Knowing that in any room that you have, there are people, the 40% are lacking confidence to share their ideas likely, right? And so that you've got to work really deliberately to reassure people that it's safe and to make it easier for people to contribute. Another mistake people will make is they try to do everything in a group. And you're also asking for ideas in your one-on-ones. You know, doing it in an anonymous way if people are really nervous. And so to make it easy for people to contribute. Now, of course, you want to get to a point that you could just go to your team and say, hey, let's talk about this together. But people are at different stages on that journey. And some may be more introverted than others. Some may have had bad experiences in the past. So I like to try to encourage managers to mix it up. Yeah, do it in your team meetings, but also do it in your one-on-ones. And also have some ways for people to contribute anonymously, at least at the beginning, so that the ones that are really scared can do that.
And that helps them feel like they might not be judged as a person for sharing that idea. All right. So let's say you're a leader who's somewhere in the middle. Maybe you're not on the front line, but you're certainly not like at the senior officer or C-suite level. Yep. But you're trying to instill this courageous culture. How can you try to influence a courageous culture, both to the people that you report to, but also to your own leadership?
What I would not do is go out and announce to your boss and everybody else, you know what, I think we need to build a courageous culture around here. And then just change the whole thing. Because you're like, oh.
That's it.
It's fine. If you're the CEO, go for that. Please do. Buy books for everybody. Bring us in. We'll help. But, you know, if you were a manager, what I would do is say, where is one area that you really need a great idea? So then I would say, and do I have any toxic courage crushing things going on in my team? Am I letting bullies get away with it because they're the top salesperson? Or is there any of that stuff going on? So you start with that navigating the narrative. And then you say, start create clarity. Do I really need a great idea? And pick something that is doable. One thing that you actually really need ideas on, not that you've already figured out the whole strategy, that you're really open to it. And then use a couple of these tools. Ask a courageous question. Or we have our own The Ugly Technique, which I can share with a link if that would be helpful to.
Oh, you know, please.
This tool. But, yes. You know, it's U, what are we underestimating? G, what's got to go? L, where are we losing? Why are we missing the yes? And so then you can say, with regard to this thing, and then you have your team brainstorm those strategic questions and come back together and say, okay, so how can we? Then use the idea model to come up with some ideas. So that's a very practical thing that you could do in a meeting or in a series of meetings to really get your team focused and let them taste the win. Pick something that you actually have agency over and your team can come up with an idea and fix it. Because what you're doing is trying to build confidence that they can come up with good ideas and that you're going to use those ideas. And so then people will start to notice, well, why are your results so good? So in chapter 6 of Courageous Cultures, I tell a story of our 2,200 person sales team when I was in my executive role at Verizon. And, you know, of course, I wasn't calling it Courageous Cultures tools back then. We were just figuring it out.
Right.
But what we did was took one idea from one person, Yomi, who was doing a different approach to sales. And what we realized is that we could scale that across and do it in different ways across our different markets. It would completely change the game. And basically, without spoiling the whole story, we determined that if we could notice that there were small business customers in our stores, we could sell 5 and 10 and 20 lines at a time as opposed to thinking they're just there for themselves and their personal phone.
Right.
And so, I mean, go ask for a lot of permission on, oh, I need to do a small business strategy in the stores. No, we just started doing it. And then, well, when our region gets to the top of the stack rank on every small business report and everything, and so Karen, what are you doing over there? Now I have credibility to share the courageous cultures kinds of things that we're doing. And so that's really where I would start. And then let your results create curiosity for people.
A lot of times people will talk about how your energy can be contagious, whether you have a positive energy, then it kind of rubs off on the people around you. Well, if your team has that type of culture, then you are going to start to see some big wins and big results. And then that culture is going to start to be contagious to your peer leaders as well.
Yes, yes.
And then you've got something to show them, like, it's not just like, it didn't happen by accident. Here's the actual process we used.
Yes, yes.
So you've had been talking about courageous cultures for a few years, and the book has been out for a few years. So I'm curious, what's next for you?
Well, thank you for asking, because we have a new book in the works, which we are so excited about.
Hooray.
It is Powerful Phrases for Dealing with Workplace Conflict, What to Say Next to De-stress the Workday, Foster Collaboration, and Calm Difficult Customers. And it is as all of our books are, extremely practical. Although Courageous Cultures is written more for leaders, this book is for any human being who has a job, right? So it's all these scenarios. What do you do if you've got a boss that's a micromanager? What do you do if you've got a dealing with a difficult customer? What do you do if somebody steals credit for your ideas? In a very practical way, and gives you powerful phrases to say to deal with that. And it's grounded in the research, our most recent research, which is the World Workplace Conflict and Collaboration Survey. So we studied people all over the world, with 46 countries so far, every state, 5,000 participants. And we are really listening to the themes. And one of the questions we asked is, what would be your advice to yourself? What's the biggest workplace conflict you've ever had? And what would be your advice to yourself if you were faced with that workplace conflict again? Hmm. You know, and because it's interesting, some of the main reasons, a lot of times people said, you know what, I wish I had stayed calmer. Well, it's hard to stay calm if you don't have the tools and resources to do it. So right. These practical approaches help you stay calm. And then, you know, other people said, I wish I had tackled the situation head on. I wish I had communicated about it. Well, it's hard to have the confidence to communicate if you don't have the tools. So this book takes that data of why people are afraid and then breaks it down and makes it very easy. Well, it's conflict conversations are never easy. Right. It makes it easier to give them more confidence and confidence to do that.
Makes
well.
Them simpler. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So that book is coming out in May of 2024. So we're very excited about that.
As you should be. I'm excited for that, too. I can't wait to read it.
Thanks.
Besides your work in helping leaders grow, you also focus on something else that's important to you, building wells, supplying clean water in Cambodia. Can you talk to me about that?
Yeah. So our first book is called Winning Well. So we build clean water, winning wells in Cambodia in honor of our clients. So if you book us for a keynote or a leadership development program, then instead of sending you a thank you note with flowers, we say, is it okay for us to build you a clean water well? And then what we'll do is we work with an organization called Together We Can Change the World, and we build a well, and it has a plaque with in celebration with. So, you know, in a celebration with Nestle,
with the client, like
the, yeah, we put the client's name on it.
Wow.
Yeah. And want to tell you how many we have. At least 160 wells in the ground so far. So that has been very, very special. David is my husband and business partner and co-author, and we had an opportunity to visit the wells a couple of years ago and see some of them and talk with the families through a translator about the impact that these wells are having on the health. And what I didn't fully grasp when we started this initiative, and their financial viability, because if you have clean water, access to it, not only will you be healthier, right, but, and not have to walk as far to get some, but you can also do things like build a lemon tree. And be able to water the lemon tree and then sell your lemons or your mangoes, or you can have water for chickens and then you can sell the eggs. And so something we all take for granted, when we turn on the spigot is, you know, in certain parts of the world, and we're in Cambodia, is really a big deal. So yeah, we're really, really grateful for that aspect of our organization.
Well, and that's something that we don't really think about a lot is the impact that that can have, not just, you know, like for, you know, healthier lifestyle, like actual access to clean water, but then the ability to do more around your village and to be able to have that kind of financial impact from being able to grow and produce more that you can sell. That's an amazing impact. I applaud you for that. And okay. I imagine that your clients are appreciative of that too.
It's really nice to see people like light up when they see their well, you know, and sometimes they'll put it in their newsletter or, you know, it's nice. Yeah.
Well, Karen, I've got one last question for you. If you were to create a 5-song playlist for Courageous Cultures, what songs would you choose?
So I love this question. And this is a question nobody has ever asked me. And so I actually had to think about it. So I would start with the song Brave. You know, right. So Sarah Bareilles. And then you're going to laugh at this one, but You've Got This from Freaky Friday, the musical. Under Pressure from Queen.
Yeah,
because, you know, that's when you need this the most, is when you're really under pressure. Better Together with Jack Johnson.
Nice.
And then Change the World with Eric Clapton.
I love that. I love that playlist. Thank you. Thank you for playing along. Well, Karen, I've learned so much. I've learned so much from your book. I've learned so much from talking with you here today. But where can people go to learn more?
Yeah, so letsgrowleaders.com is our website, and we publish a blog weekly. I do a show called Asking for a Friend, which is practical leadership advice. David has a podcast called Leadership Without Losing Your Soul. All that stuff can be found at letsgrowleaders.com, and you can download free chapters of our books, all of that stuff there.
Yeah, and download lots of different tools and templates and assessments, too.
Yep.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Karen.
Oh, it's been absolutely my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
I hope you enjoyed my discussion with Karen Hurt. You can learn more from her at letsgrowleaders.com. From their blog, to their podcast, to their downloadable resources, you'll find lots of ways to level up your leadership and create your own courageous culture. And if you want to dive deeper into some of the lessons we discussed today, then go grab your copy of Karen's book, Courageous Cultures. You can even start reading the first chapter for free at letsgrowleaders.com. And if you're enjoying the Simple Brand podcast, go ahead and hit the subscribe button. It's going to make it so much simpler for you to get future episodes like the next one featuring Derek Day. Derek and I discuss all things brand strategy. So go ahead and subscribe. You'll automatically get Derek's episode as soon as it's live. Until then, keep it simple.